Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Up with an explanation on his actions on Sunday. We can get into that at the end of the show. College football topics in the middle. What are your lasting memories? What are the lasting moments of this college football season, both in-state and nationwide? I think this has been one of the more tumultuous seasons in-state, at least for Oklahoma, on the college football gridiron that I can certainly ever remember from the summertime with what's happened on the with the SEC, you know, conference realignment to the way that the season was disjointed, and then, of course, everything that's happened since it's over. It's been kind of a wild ride for Oklahoma. Oklahoma State, the exact opposite. They've been pretty slow and steady. The tortoise and the hare. The tortoise won the race as they were able to reel off a 12-2. And then nationwide, there's been a bunch of different lasting moments, I think, all across, both on and off the field. And kind of like OU, it feels like the off-the-field ones for me are what's going to be sticks in my mind. And, of course, we've got high school basketball tournaments all across the area. Jared Atha is at one of those. Jared, what's up?
How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing wonderful.
How's your day? How's so far? Are you thawed out? My goodness, it's cold.
Oh, it's all of you folks out there that have been wishing for the cold and not liking the unseasonably warm temperatures, here you go. You got what you wanted. Now I'm ready for it to jump back in the 80s.
Yeah, those are the people I blame for this. Those who wish they had cold weather on Christmas Day. Those are the people I'm blaming right now. I'm in a gym, if you can't tell, and I'm getting a lot of weird looks because I just have AirPods in, and I look like I'm talking to myself, and I'm talking rather loudly, too. I'll say it real loud. I'm doing a radio show. That's why. Okay. Some of the people just kind of waved at me. Okay. All right. So it's clear now. But I am in Sealing, Oklahoma, in the Ward Center, getting ready for the Ward Center Classic. Canute starts things off today, taking on the girls start off taking on Drummond. Team with only two losses, I believe 14th in Class A. And then the boys play the host team, Sealing. Sealing coming in ranked 20th, but with one loss. Canute coming in ranked 14th. I believe that's right. So it promises me a couple good games.
Tell us about the Ward Center. From all the pictures that I've seen, it looks like a fantastic venue to host that tournament.
When I come into a place like this, I have one word how I describe a gym like this. It's a gem of a gem. It is beautiful. It's a modern setup, plenty of seating. And I also want to, I've only been here for, 10, 15 minutes, and the hospitality has been fantastic. What do you need? What do you need? What can we get for you here? And then, but I'll reserve any judgment until I go into the hospitality room, which I was told I know where it's at, and we're probably a little early to get lunch, but maybe I can get a brunch or something. But it is a fantastic venue. If you haven't seen a basketball game in here, I'm excited to see some basketball, in this building. And like I said, I mean, if you have a gym and they name the tournament after the gym, I think you got yourself a pretty good gym.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good point. That exhale you heard, kind of that, that was Sean from the other room, upset at you you haven't already been in the hospitality room. 10 minutes is kind of you got to get there in the first 10.
I get real paranoid. You know me, man. I like to get to a place early enough to set up and make sure there's no hiccups. So that's what I'm doing right now. You're going to hear a lot of noise in the background. That's me setting up and making sure we're ready to go for the broadcast. But by the time I'm done with my broadcast, it should be in the 12 o'clock hour at some point. So I'm anticipating some lunch here.
Who else is in that tournament up there? Obviously, the Sealing girls are a team that's ranked in the top five in Class A that'll be there. Who else are some of the better teams in the boys and the girls bracket that'll be there at the Ward Center Classic with you this week?
Well, I should have this memorized, but I got to bust open the bracket right now. Give me a second. Okay, you mentioned Sealing coming in number 3 in Class A. Bayside's in it traditionally pretty good. I know they're having kind of a down year this year, but they're always going to give you a fight. Canute's seen that firsthand. Arnett's really good. They're the only Class B team in this field. They're ranked eighth. Arnett girls staying in the girls bracket. Texoma comes in. They are 6-1 on the year. Surreal girls are ranked 11th. They're 7-1. Is it Fargo, Gage, Sports Supply, unranked but come in with a winning record. And then the boys bracket is just as tough. You got the ceiling boys, like I mentioned. Byside boys, Coach Haley has them playing really good. They're 9-2, ranked 12th in Class A. Drummond comes in with a winning record. Surreal, what are they, 2-3 years removed from a state title? They're in this thing. They're ranked 9th in top 10, 6-2. So, like, and I knew that coming in when I saw that Canute was in this tournament. I thought, if we're going to a tournament that's in ceiling, it's going to attract a lot of really good teams, and that's the case. This tournament's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting looking at the rankings there in Class A. When you got Surreal at number 9. Are the Texoma boys there? The girls were, right? Are they there too?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Texoma. So, I'm sorry, yes. Texoma, man, so, girls are 6-1, and Texoma boys, yeah, they're ranked 9th and 6-1 too. So you're talking about,
let's see, a tie for 9th in Class A between Surreal and Texoma. You mentioned Visay at 12, Canute's at 14. Ceiling at 20, but right there from Canute up to the Surreal and Texoma, you know we've been beating this over the head this week about where the rankings get, you know, they stop on Monday basically for the pairings in the playoffs. So, you know, for the Trojans specifically, chances to really make their mark with the win against a bunch of good teams, a bunch of ranked teams. You know, if they could reel off 3 straight and win this thing, maybe that's possible that they could jump all the way up into the top 8. It's a tough ask, but, you know, it's one of those things that it's not out of the realm of possibility when you consider who they're going to have to play to win the thing.
Yeah, you're talking, you know, both sides. I know the girls are unranked, but they could at least get in that top 20, and then the boys do their job and get into that top 8. They get some help, but as far as, you know, playoff positioning and travel. But, you know, and it was almost a shame that Canute had to take a Christmas break because they were red hot going into the break, with both teams winning, beating Duke, took care of Burns Flat. I mean, they were actually playing really good basketball, team basketball. It wasn't more of an individual effort, it was team basketball. And then he had to take a break. Now, I know there's been some scrimmages for both squads, you know, to keep them fresh and everything. But it, to me personally, I'm like, man, I really don't want to go to Christmas break. I want to jump right to this Ward Center Classic and really, you know, test them and keep that momentum going. So we'll see if that momentum that they built before the break can carry over into the second part of this season.
Yeah, elsewhere around the area, getting started today here, same time as you are at 10 o'clock, we'll have the Warrior Classic up in Hammond. The Hammond Lady Warriors take on Corn Bible at 10. And then the nightcap of that one will be Hammond and Boys City on the boys' side. Another interesting team that's not necessarily flown under the radar because of a couple of wins they have, but the Sentinel Bulldogs. They're Class B's number 14, but they have, to their credit, 2 wins over the number 5 team in Class A. So you wonder what an impressive showing there would be, you know, how much that would help Sentinel when it comes to where the playoff pairing is going to be. Obviously, the Hammond Lady Warriors. One disappointment, I guess, that comes out of the birth of Frank Teague. Is that Lomega's not there. Their JV's there, but the Lomega, the Lady Raiders varsity won't be there. And so we're not going to maybe get that, you know, state tournament preview between those two teams and that girls bracket up there at Hammond. So the Lady Warriors of Hammond, to me, clearly the favorite there. And then we'll see if Sentinel, you know, they're the only ranked team in the tournament on the boys' side. And so you would assume that they're in a pretty good spot. Out at Merritt this week, you've got a couple of ranked teams in 2A, and the Oilerettes have a chance with a potential finals matchup on Saturday against Hooker. Hooker's the 2A number 6, Merritt 2A number 11. So that could be a first feather in the Oilerettes' cap. And then, as we've talked about, the Bi-County coming up in a couple of weeks will be another chance for them to really kind of stamp their spot into the top 8 of 2A when those rankings, those don't get locked in this week. It's another couple of weeks down the road for the bigger schools. So Merritt with a chance. We saw last year, quite honestly, ended up, I think, number 9. And that was a huge difference in being able to make the state tournament and not, because instead of being one of those top eight seeds, they end up having to play both Latta and Silo, and we're unable to get past either one of those. So, you know, Oilerettes with a chance here in the first couple weeks of January to kind of change that, flip that on its head from last year. On the boys' side, Hooker's 2A number 9, Mangum's 2A number 19. That would be a semifinal if it were to occur. Let's see, Merritt playing the Nightcaps, I think 6 o'clock for the girls, and then following for the boys at 7:15. We'll have both of those Paragon TV, and also right here on KADS for the radio side of that. 6 o'clock and then 7:15 are the scheduled times for the Merritt games tonight out at their Merritt Classic. We won't have any coverage of these, but the Western Equipment, it's a good field, man. On the girls side, you're talking about 2A number 3, Class A's number 12, and Class B's number 4 in Arapahoe, Laquipa Sickles, and Ampo. On the boys' side, Ampo and Arapahoe. Hopefully, you know, that I think that'd be a fun one to watch in the final, with Ampo number 7 and Class 2A, Arapahoe number 5. Then up in the Oil Center Classic in Woodward, man, it's a lot different than what we're used to, right? When you look around, used to seeing both leading teams at the very top of that bracket as the number one seeds over the past few years. Don't see that this year, as neither leading team is ranked going into the Oil Center Classic. But Class B is well represented in the top 20 on both sides, with Tyrone, Balco, and Forgan ranked on the girls' bracket. And then Tyrone and Forgan are ranked in the boys' bracket. Leedy plays Forgan first today on the boys' side at 5:30. We'll have that on Paragon TV. And then the Lady Bison will follow. So it'll be boys first, girls second for Leedy up there at Woodward tonight, with Leedy at 7 o'clock on the girls' side against number 20 Tyrone. I'm anxious to see, of all the teams coming out of the breaks, these two are the ones that I'm anxious to see how much better they got, Jared, because I'm just not used to seeing the Leedy team struggle the way they did in the pre-Christmas portion of the schedule.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And when you get at that with Leedy, you get that kind of a ranking where you're at. You know, like you said, they're typically at the top of the rankings, and now they're not. It's an opportunity for them to maybe turn some heads, you know, take advantage of where you're ranked. Maybe you can get some teams not looking at, you know, overlooking you a little bit. So, yeah, it's interesting to see how, you know, and we know that Leedy with both coaches can turn that thing around. So I'm interested to see how they approach this January and how they do that.
Let's see. And then Elk City at Hinton today. Pretty good tournament for the Elkettes and the Big Elks. I think a chance for the Elkettes to win the thing if they can play the way that they did on Tuesday night against Anadarko here, even though in a loss. But when you look, only two teams with winning records in this tournament: Christian Heritage, the 1 seed at 4-3, Community Christian, the 2 seed at 4-3. Then you have the Elkettes there at 2-4 is the 3 seed. They played Newcastle today. Newcastle's 1-6. Their only win was against Elgin just a couple of weeks, I think the last game maybe before Christmas break. So a really good chance, I think, for the Elkettes to kind of build some confidence here. And you know, maybe the field on the girls' side over there in Hinton isn't as strong as what it is on the boys', but I do think this is a chance for the Elkettes to play good games this weekend against some decent teams and get some confidence with some wins, because, quite frankly, the schedule isn't going to let up for Elk City in that Western Conference. We've talked about it throughout the year so far. You know, multiple top 20 teams, heck, multiple top 10 teams on the girls' side. And so that schedule is just unrelenting for Elk City throughout. And so maybe this is a chance for a little bit of a reprieve when you're not just sitting there facing top 10 4A teams night in, night out. On the boys' side, though, totally different story. There's three teams ranked in the top 20 in their respective classes. The number one seed is Hinton. They're 8-0. Class 2A is number 5. That would be a potential semifinal matchup. But first, today at 5:40, Fort Cobb. And, you know, anytime you hear Fort Cobb-Broxton, Jared, that's a program that has been every bit as good as anybody in the state of Oklahoma over the past decade and a half, or heck, two decades since Coach Hines has been down there.
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of like feeling here with the girls, you know, they've been, I don't say down, but they've missed out on a couple of state titles last couple of years. And, you know, when we saw the result with Fort Cobb and Arapaho thought, everyone thought, well, that might be, this might be the year where Fort Cobb is finally down, you know, to the point where people can knock them off a couple of times. I don't think that's the case. I really don't, because how many have they lost? Just one or two?
10 and 3, and when you look at the losses have come against really good teams. Hinton, as I mentioned, is one of those losses. Lost that one by 4 or by 5. They lost in overtime in the Arapaho game that you're talking about. And then Indiahoma was the first rattle out of the box this year. Indiahoma's number 7 in Class B. And so quality losses, if you want to look at it that way, they haven't necessarily been able to beat anybody of note outside of, I guess, Hobart in 2A. The Bearcats are ranked 18th. Just looking at just rankings and records, I would say that's Fort Cobb's best win so far. Probably Merritt right there behind that from the other night. And so, yeah, it's not the – I don't think that this is by any stretch the vintage Fort Cobb that we're used to with Kellen and Cameron Hines and that group of a few years back. But I also don't think it's near – they're near as down as what some people think around the state.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
All right, that's the high school basketball. It's going to be a bunch of fun. Let's go back. All right, so for Elk City today, you've got 420 and 540 for the girls and then the boys. Big Elk TV, Cool 94 on the radio side. Up at Hammond, 10 o'clock, Kennedy will have the girls against Corn Bible Academy, and then she'll take a giant break. So the first game will be the Hammond Lady Warriors, and then the nightcap tonight will be Hammond and Boise City. That's an 8:30 scheduled tip there on Paragon TV for both of those. Out at Merritt, I mentioned the Oilerettes and OKC Knights. That's a 6 o'clock tip. Paragon TV, and then radio right here on KADS. That will be followed by Merritt in Wellington, Texas. And then you've got games at, what, 10? And then following right after with the boys on Paragon TV for Canute. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
All right, so 10 and, say, 11:30 or 11:15.
It's scheduled 11:20.
11:20, okay.
Yeah, you know tournaments work.
Yeah, they'll just go. It'll be back-to-back there on Paragon TV for Canute. And then tonight – I think that says 5:30, or no, maybe that says 8:30. It is 8:30. So 7 o'clock and 8:30 for Leedy. So 7 o'clock for the girls. Had that backwards. I thought that was a 5, but it's a no. It is a 5. Okay, so 5:30 for the Leedy boys. 5:30 for Leedy and Forgan on the boys' side, followed by the girls at 7. It's hard to make out this bracket, but that's what it says. 5:30 for the boys. 7 o'clock for the girls up there in Woodward. Another a couple of games that I've skipped over here in the bracket. Up in Hammond, 1 o'clock, also on Paragon TV, you'll have Eric and Sentinel on the girls' side, followed by the Eric boys and Shattuck. So both of those Eric teams, also Paragon TV, 1 o'clock for the girls and 2:30 for the boys up in Hammond. Jared Atha on site up at Sealing, getting ready for Canute to play a couple games in the Ward Center Classic. All right, Jared, what are some of the moments that you're going to remember from the college football season? You can start in-state, nationwide, whichever you'd like, but what are some of those indelible moments that you're going to remember from this college football season?
I'll start kind of chronologically. It's going to have to be in the off season, in the summer, with the news of the SEC, with OU and Texas going to the SEC. That was huge, absolutely huge. It changed the entire football landscape as a nation, because ultimately the Big 12 had to scramble to find replacements, basically. They're trying to build up to, obviously, back to 12 teams. So conference realignment, I guess, was number one for me with a big change there. And then, you know, going into the surprising sluggish start for OU and OSU. You know, OSU kind of was sluggish to start the year, but they figured some things out, and the rest is history. OU, it was surprising because they came in preseason ranked number 2, and how they struggled against Tulane and leading up to the Texas game, and even that start was horrible in that Texas game. And that leads me to the Texas game with the quarterback change, the dramatic comeback, probably the most electric Red River rivalry we've probably ever seen yet. And then, of course, Lincoln Riley leaving. That's obviously big and huge. And again, changes a lot because the coaching carousel really started to turn once he left. There were some changes before that. And, you know, and then OSU, you know, I hate to call it, because it seems like it's almost a slap in their face when you call it a surprising season. getting to the Big 12 championship, cut up a yard, literally a half a yard short from the college football playoffs. And, you know, they probably would tell you, we expected to be like that. No one outside of Stillwater did, let's be honest. So some of the things in state that stood out to me. Sorry, I just got handed a complimentary pass and food voucher for this place. So that kind of distracted me. Those were the things that stood out for me.
I'm going to have to petition the Elk City coaches and administration to get to go to Sealing next year with all the stuff that's going on up there.
It shouldn't be a shock that Sealing knows how to do basketball.
No, it shouldn't.
they know, you know what I mean? They know how to do a basketball tournament. They know how to do things here.
I wrote down a lot of the same things. In state, there were two things early, I think, for Oklahoma State that really kind of stood out, and that's the shutout of Boise in the second half that allowed them to hang on and win that game. And then, to me, one of the biggest plays of the season, not only in the state of Oklahoma, but also nationwide, was that Jason Taylor pick six against Texas. It's so easy to forget exactly how that was going at that time because we know what happened afterwards, right? But you got Texas reeling off that comeback loss to Oklahoma. But at that point, the offense was still rolling down there, right? I mean, it seemed like they had really kind of figured some things out with Thompson as the quarterback, Sarkisian's offense being installed, Bijan Robinson. I mean, heck, Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson were going to give him the Heisman in the first half of that game against OSU. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was what was being talked about. And the Longhorns are right there on the doorstep to maybe blow that thing wide open when Jason Taylor steps in front of a Casey Thompson pass, takes it back for a touchdown, and then OSU, maybe as a foreshadowing of things to come, that defense just suffocated Texas in the second half, which they would go on to do over and over. And heck, it even started in the Boise game with the shutout in the second half of the Broncos. So, you know, that Jason Taylor play, I don't think it gets near the credit. And maybe another thing I'm going to mention here on the OSU side in a couple of minutes is why. But I don't think that play is getting the respect and the due that it deserves in how it propelled Oklahoma State to the season they had. Obviously, the Bedlam.
See, think about this. I'm sorry to interrupt, but think about how close OU was to intercepting Spencer Sanders for a pick six that would have totally derailed the outcome of OSU's season. Remember? I can't tell me who it was.
Key Lawrence.
I can't remember who it was.
Key,
yes,
Lawrence.
It was in his breadbasket. He had nothing but green turf and an orange end zone between them. And it was that close. If he had caught that, if he had picked that off, took it to the house, we're not talking about a Big 12 championship. We would. We would be talking about a rematch, a Bedlam rematch.
Right.
And then who knows what happens there? Are we talking about a Fiesta Bowl win? Are we talking about playoff for OU? Are we talking about Lincoln Riley leaving? Would it have changed his mind if he could have got the team to the playoffs and then history would have changed? I mean, that's another one of those plays, the what-if plays.
Yeah, that's
what if that happened? You know what I mean? The ramifications of that.
And see, and
would,
to me,
would have been huge.
To me, that's why Jason Taylor actually making the play is why it's getting, I can't believe it's getting lost in the shuffle, right? And part of it is because, I mean, obviously the Bedlam win for OSU is a huge thing to break that streak dating back to 2014 and in really all the way back to 2011 in games that actually mattered for either team, because that 2014 game was two teams that were just trying to make bowl games, basically, on the repunt to Tyreek Hill. But this one was a game that mattered for both that OSU was able to win. And I think maybe the reason why Jason Taylor's play doesn't get as much credit as what it deserves is the next play. And like it or not, one of the indelible images from this college football season is Desmond Jackson diving 2 inches short of that pylon down in Jerry World in the Big 12 title game, right? I mean, that's the camera work and the angles they had, heck, from the pylon cam and all that. Those are going to be – it just is. It's going to be one of those images from this season that everyone's going to always remember just because of how close it was to being a game-winning touchdown run. And then, of course, the Fiesta Bowl comeback that capped off a 12-2 season, and the fact that it was against Notre Dame, I think that can't be overstated as how big a win that was for Oklahoma State at this point in time, where everything is about realignment and building your brand to the highest possible level so that you can be considered if things fall apart and you'll have a landing spot, right? In the event that everything blows up. OSU and that win over Notre Dame on the national stage, and I think we saw Mike Gundy take his opportunity to rile up the base after that win, and as well he should, because it's hard to imagine him having a much of a bigger stage than what it was after beating Notre Dame for the first time those schools have played. On the OU side, you mentioned the Texas game, the run on fourth down for Caleb Williams. What is what everybody thought at the time? All right, this is kind of the moment, right? This is the moment where he took the reins of an offense that may lead him to a Heisman Trophy at OU at one point. That doesn't look like it's going to be the case anymore, but at the time, that was a huge play. And one of those moments that, Sooner Magic was back, right? Disjointed nature. I think the disjointed nature of the season is probably the overarching theme of everything. From Williams even getting an opportunity to make that play because of Rattler's struggles, to the way the defense did not perform up to the level that anybody thought it would coming off of last year's performance, and then we maybe found out why when Riley left. Was did he have one foot out the door the entire season? Who knows? And I don't know if we'll ever really know the answer to that. But it certainly explains what a lot of us just kind of head-scratching moments, getting shut out by Kansas in the first half or whatever. I mean, there's so many weird things, right, that didn't make any sense.
The lack of, effort or lack of tackling or whatever you want to call it, lack of preparedness, it was – it explained a lot if that certainly was the case, if Riley indeed had a foot out the door the entire season and players knew it. Why would there be motivation to coach for a guy that's going to leave you? But, again, you're right. We will never know. We will never know the true story there. I mean, unless maybe it's, 30 years from now and it's on a 30 for 30
of <Right.
laughs> what really happened, because, it was definitely soap opera material. But, just crazy into what's disheartening if you're an OU fan is the potential of what the season could have been, and then there's the distractions like that, the alleged distractions like that. That's what, me personally as an OU fan drives me nuts. So, I can understand if it was a team that was going to go 7-5 and you're already looking for another landing spot, sure. But a team that came in with all these expectations, with all this returning talent, with a Heisman caliber quarterback appeared to be going into the season, and then to do that, and we're talking about this like it is it was a 7-5 season. Because I think you talk about stuff getting failed or lost in the shuffle with, you finished with just 2 losses. Which is crazy to me. They finished 11-2 with a bowl win, and one thing we didn't mention. Another big storyline from the college football season was the return of Bob Stoops for one more game.
Yeah, that's the next thing down my list. It's the Bob on the sidelines. I think if you're one of those OU fans that was frustrated and doesn't really want to remember much about what, especially because the good moments from the season will probably sour here in the next few days when Williams announces he's not returning, then what do you have to fall back on? You have to fall back on Bob Stoops, right? You had to fall back on Bob Stoops on the sidelines in the Alamo Bowl, getting some sort of revenge from the 2006 Oregon fiasco with the onside kick. And then, even after that, I think maybe the most indelible moment, if things go the way that OU fans hope they go over the next 5 to 10 years, I think the moment that'll be looked back upon on this season the most fondly was after the game in the visor handoff from Bob Stoops to Brent Venables. I think this season's going to be remembered one of two ways. Either that, if things go good for OU, or it's going to be remembered with the Caleb Williams run and the what could have been if things go bad with him and Riley leaving and maybe even joining forces out in L.A. here over the next couple of weeks. So a weird season for Oklahoma, and a really great season for Oklahoma State. I think nationwide, you mentioned OU and Texas to the SEC before things got started. That's the bombshell outside of maybe NIL, but that changes the everything, right? Just the complexion of the entire nation changes with those two and the dominoes that fall after that. You also mentioned coaching carousel. Can you, if you know, back in August, if I'd have told you Oklahoma, USC, actually stop. If I'd have told you Texas Tech, TCU, West Virginia, Washington would have come open, you'd have thought, huh, that's some pretty good jobs, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, try OU, USC, Notre Dame, Oregon, LSU, Florida, and Miami to add on top of that list. Just a crazy – and by the way, it's not out of the realm of possibility Michigan's not to bat, or Ohio State could come open here shortly with one of those two jumping to the NFL. There's a pretty big smoke about Harbaugh and the Bears, Ryan Day and the Bears, so watch out for that coming down the pike. But especially,
wow, that's news to me.
Oh yeah, dude, if it's Ohio State, that is four of the five what I would consider blue bloods in the country opening the same offseason. OU, USC, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. Only Bama wouldn't be. And, heck, who knows? Nick may ride off in the sunset if they win on Monday night. Oh, just meteoric changes to head coaching jobs in college football.
Well, it doesn't help, I think, that some of these coaches, like these blue blood – you talk about blue blood programs, there's blue blood coaches like Nick Saban. You know, Bob Stoops, you know, would Bob Stoops still be coaching in this world that we live in now with the NIL? You know, you're right. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Nick, like, you know what, I don't want to deal with the NIL. We mentioned yesterday, we don't hear much about NIL stuff out of Alabama, you know, but, you know, eventually it's going to come. You're going to start hearing about it. And I wonder if Nick Saban comes to a point where you're right. If he wins the title, he goes, that's it for me. What was it, 15 years at Alabama?
Yeah, 2007 through the 20. Yeah, that'd be exactly 15, and he'd have won half of them. He'd have won seven of the 15 titles.
So what if he? What if? I mean, would it shock you? It's a seriously question. Would it shock you if he says, "That's it. I don't want to compete with the NIL stuff. I recruit my way. Now I don't want to recruit with this new way we have to recruit, promising NIL deals, millions of dollars. I've done what enough. I'm done that. Nobody else is going to do. Quite frankly." I'm not saying it's happening. We haven't heard anything about that. Just to stress that to our listeners, we haven't heard any rumors about that. But it would not shock me with the way the college game is changing, both on and off the field. It wouldn't shock me if Nick Saban says, "I'm done."
Yeah, it would. Here's what would shock me more: if he actually changed. He's not changing. He's going to prove that
change
philosophies. From a total outsider looking in, I would say his mindset would be way more, I'm doing it the way I do it, the way I've always done it. I don't have to do what you people are doing. Watch this, I'm winning. As opposed to changing, you know what I'm saying? I think that's what would be shocking to me if he actually bowed down to all this crap. All you have to do is say, listen, come play for me. If you don't want to, kiss the ring, because we're going to win. We don't have to promise you. You know, we don't have to put out the weak butt statement that Castiglione and Venables put out of just begging Caleb Williams publicly to come back to Oklahoma. You imagine Nick Saban doing that? Hell no. He doesn't have to do it. He's saying, listen, come play for me, and I can promise you a national championship. Literally. Every 4 years, they win it. There's not a recruiting class since he's gotten there that in 4 years hasn't won a title. Period. End of story. So he doesn't have to, you know, kowtow to the new age of college football just for one guy. It's not about one guy. He actually believes that Alabama football isn't about, well, maybe not him, but it isn't about one player. I can promise you that. Right. It's about Alabama, and it's about the process and all that. He actually believes it, whereas I think some at OU say it, but judging by that statement released when Caleb jumped into the portal, I don't know how much they actually believe it, and it's a little bit embarrassing to me that was even put out there because the show is going to go on with or without Caleb Williams as a quarterback at Oklahoma, and if history proves anything, the show will be a fantastic one because of the history and the tradition of OU football. The more I think about that statement being released, the madder it makes me because, you know, you go through a whole month of all you hear and all you see with all these videos is program, not one thing. It's not one guy. And as soon as he puts his name out there, you fire that statement out there like that. It's just a little bit embarrassing. I think it should be embarrassing for Oklahoma athletics, and it should be embarrassing for those guys that have put their name to that statement after stressing what they stressed for an entire month after Riley left. But anyhow, one other thing I think on the field for me that you'll remember, and it's because of the dominoes that fell in place, was the end of the Iron Bowl. You know, Auburn has that game in hand. They run out of bounds to stop the clock to give Alabama one last gasp, and Bryce Young leads them 97 yards for a touchdown that gets the game into overtime, which eventually they win, which put them in the SEC title game, which has now put them into the national title game, and also, by the way, cemented Bryce Young's ability to win the Heisman Trophy. You know, think about just a guy falling down 2 yards faster than he did in bounds, and all that could have changed. An immense amount of things could have changed right then. You're talking about the pick six from Key Lawrence. Think about that. Bama may not make the playoffs. So does Notre Dame. Is Notre Dame in with the OSU? How excruciating is it now that Desmond Jackson came up 2 inches short for OSU fans when that was their spot in the playoff? Right? I mean, just think all that changed by Finley not going out of bounds, or going out of bounds and not just falling down in the field of play. So, you know, for what seemed like an almost kind of boring season in some ways, it turned out not that way, because then you had new blood in the playoff with Michigan and Cincinnati. Gosh, is it the first time ever in the playoff era that you didn't have either Oklahoma, Ohio State, or Clemson in it? I believe that's right. Bama's still there, of course, but those other three weren't. And, you know, a mixture of those teams has been a fixture in the playoff for these first 7 or 8 years. And this year, none of the three. And so maybe, well, does that signal anything, or does that just signal those teams had a little bit of a down year?
I just think they weighed, like you said, I mean, a couple plays different here and there, and then you got some of those normal teams back in there. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just a matter of circumstance and consequences of things, how things happened on the field. And we were close. You know, Ohio State, close. You know, Oklahoma, close, but not. It's just how it shakes out sometimes.
Yeah,
and you know, and the thing is about all that is expanding playoffs, expand playoffs. It's kind of like the BCS era. It's kind of seeing this again. We have an expanded playoff. It's called a regular season.
Yeah, it is, but I think there's a lot to unpack there about an expanded playoff. The one thing that this season, even still, there's one portion of the country that doesn't care by the time October rolls around, and that's the West Coast. I think that expanded playoff guaranteeing spots for conference title winners at least helps that. Now, we talked, you know, this week, how much does the West Coast still care about football, high school up into college? We don't know. But I do believe that you could at least get some more eyeballs. I know Salt Lake City cares. You know, you don't think that Utah wouldn't have wanted a shot at one of those big boys after winning one game in the playoff as the Big 12, or as the Pac-12 champ? I think you got another game coming, because they put a scare and looked like they probably should have beat Ohio State for a lot of that game, even though they didn't get it done. So I think maybe as much as anything, watching what you saw in the Rose Bowl, in the Fiesta Bowl, and even the Sugar Bowl to some extent, has you believing, you know what, an expanded playoff gets us more good games, because right now those semifinal games aren't worth a damn because they're blowouts each and every year, almost every single year, right?
Right. Agreed.
And so maybe.
Hey, I got to go.
Yep, you do. All right, get on the air.
I got my pregame.
All right.
All right, bud.
Canute, Paragon TV, who they play? Girls play Drummond, the boys play Ceiling?
They got Drummond, and then the boys play the host team Ceiling, which is kind of odd. You think the host team would play at night, but that's how seeding works out, too.
Yeah, and you got to have some.
There should be a couple of good ones.
You give the kids a chance to get out of class and go over and watch, too.
That's true. They're already kind of filling in here.
Yep. All right, man. Have a good broadcast.
All right. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. Jared Atha from Ceiling joining us to talk about the college football season and some high school basketball tournaments that are starting today all across the area. I'll tell you what, We'll give you another rundown of those before we get out of here, where you can watch, who you can watch, what time you can watch, and even what time you can hear a couple of those games in the high school basketball tournament season starting now, the first of 2 weeks in January, where basically everybody in Oklahoma is in one of these tournaments. We're wrapping it up here on a Thursday. We'll get you that one more time with all the games that'll be on Paragon TV, Big Elk TV, radio as well, before we cut out of here. But first, some interesting stories from really around the globe. Yesterday came out that Novak Djokovic, who is, you know, depending on what metric you want to use, maybe the greatest tennis player of all time. He's won more Australian Opens than anybody in the modern era, looking to go down and win his 10th. He was giving special medical exemption by two separate independent medical boards in the country of Australia to be able to travel down and play in the Australian Open that starts, a week from Monday. And as he's flying into the country, the politicians in Australia stop him at the border, and they have now detained him, say his visa is not credible, and the reasons for the medical exemptions, which medical people, doctors on these boards, two separate independent boards, allowed for him to receive those exemptions. The politician stopped him and said no. It's just an amazing, amazing time in our world where the folks that yell and scream and try to trick you into follow the science as their main object idea behind the policies that they're writing for your life have now jumped in, and the people behind the science, the science people, are wrong, and those politicians in Australia are right. Just an incredible turn of events. So basically, Novak Djokovic is about to be deported back to Serbia and not allowed to compete in the Australian Open. So a wild time down there for Djokovic after he had gone through the proper channels and the what would most people would think the proper authorities in that, the doctors that make those decisions on those medical boards are the ones that allowed him to be able to do that. Then you've got Aaron Rodgers yesterday. I think some people applauded this, some didn't, but Aaron Rodgers snapped back at the reporter Hub Arkush, who basically said he wouldn't vote Aaron Rodgers the MVP because he thought he was a jerk, and then he also said about how he hurt his team by being held out again. Listen, Hub, we know why you're not going to vote for him. You're not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers the MVP because you don't like that he's not vaccinated. That's just the truth. You can make up all these other stories about it, but that's why you're not going to do it. And Aaron Rodgers clapped back at him with just basically called him a bum, and they'd never met, so how does he know that Aaron Rodgers is a jerk and that kind of thing? And then Antonio Brown, man. After what happened on Sunday with him taking off his jersey, taking off everything basically but his pants, and running out of the stadium in New York in his last official act as a Tampa Bay Buck, we thought he hasn't been officially released by the team. And now you wonder if this isn't wise. Antonio Brown comes out today and says that the team tried to force him to play through an ankle injury and gave him drugs or that aren't necessarily the best thing for guys with injuries. There's a lot more to this story than maybe what met the eye. I don't think it excuses Antonio Brown's actions by any stretch of the imagination. I think there's still something wrong with Antonio Brown mentally, and there has been for a while. And it starts way back in his upbringing, to be quite honest. But maybe what we're seeing here is a possible reason for his actions. Not an excuse for his actions, but in his mind, what is the justification of him doing that? And it's he believed that that the Buccaneers didn't have his health at the forefront of what they were doing. So we'll see what happens to this. A possible explanation of the Bucs not releasing him yet. Or maybe there's just some hurdles that have to be jumped from with the way that those mechanics work in the league to ensure that the Bucs protect themselves liability-wise and that sort of thing from anything that Antonio Brown could try to come back on? Or is there something to this? And that's why he's not being released, because then they know that that opens them up to some sort of liability problem with the way that they treated or didn't treat Antonio Brown's injury to his ankle in the way that maybe they were supposed to. So there's probably still a little bit. If there's something to this from what Antonio Brown has put out there, then we haven't heard the last of it. If this dies down and then he's released in some sort of manner coming moving forward, then this is just kind of an excuse, and we'll all go back to, or some of us go back to believing that Antonio Brown needs mental help. I mean, he clearly does, no matter what no matter what happens in this situation, he clearly does need help. But maybe this will go a long ways in whether or not he gets that help or not. All right, let's look at the high school basketball schedule for today one more time. Okay, so the multiple tournaments all across the area. We'll start, just because it's the first one I picked up. Up at Hammond, you've got the Warrior Classic. A couple of the Paragon TV schools involved in this one. So starting here in about 3 minutes, over on Paragon TV, the Class B number 2 Hammond Lady Warriors taking on Corn Bible Academy. There'll be a bit of a break, and then at 1 o'clock, Class B number 15 Eric Lady Bearcats, they play Sentinel at 1. So you've got Hammond girls at 10, Sentinel girls at 1. Then you've got the Hammond girls at 10, Eric girls against Sentinel at 1. And then the Eric boys will play right after that at 2:30 against Shattuck. Then the nightcap on Paragon TV, Hammond, Boyce City, that'll be an 8:30 scheduled tip. Also on Paragon TV, but then also right here on KADS for radio coverage, you've got the Merritt Oilerettes against OKC Knights. That'll be at 6 o'clock here on KADS Paragon TV for the live stream. Immediately following that one will be the boys' game. The Merritt Oilers will take on the Wellington Skyrockets. That's at 7:15. So Merritt girls start at 6, the boys to follow there at 7:15. Up in Woodward, the Oil Center Classic, Paragon TV coverage of Leedy. Got the Bison taking on Forgan at 5:30, immediately followed by the Lady Bison and Tyrone at 7 o'clock. Then on Big Elk TV and also Cool 94 for radio, Elkettes and Newcastle's Lady Racers at 4:20, followed immediately by the Big Elks and the Fort Cobb Broxton Mustangs at 5:40. That's got Big Elk TV for the video stream, Cool 94 for radio. I'll get started around 4 o'clock, just a little after probably, for the pregame ahead of the Elkettes and the Newcastle Lady Racers. 4:20 for the girls, 5:40 for the boys for Elk City on Big Elk TV and Cool 94. Everybody, figure out a way to stay warm today. The wind chill is no joke out there. It's freezing cold, literally. The wind chills are in the negative category all the way up through the 10 o'clock hour right now. So stay warm outside. It'll start to warm up tomorrow, be nice and warm on Saturday, and then the bottom will fall out on Sunday. But, hey, welcome to winter weather in the state of Oklahoma. Glad you guys could come along. Appreciate Jared for joining us from Sealing. Also, Canute. Forgot about that one. Canute and Right Now, Paragon TV. The girls play Drummond, followed by the boys against the host Sealing Wildcats up at the Word Center Classic at Sealing. Paragon TV for that. So tons and tons and tons of live video streamed high school basketball all throughout the day through Saturday. Everybody have a wonderful Thursday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.